truth be told, or your bullshit getting old. The world is getting cold. Don't nobody owe you nothing, so quit fronting. Nothing wrong with being honest. It's a lot of broken promises. Truth be told, we could communicate without all the gun violence. All it took was one conversation. It'll prevent a whole lot of altercation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of Truth Be Told. And it is the holiday season, so I know we have a lot to be thankful for. And I'm especially thankful for my guest I'm going to introduce to you. He's one of the hottest wrestlers right now. He's known to some as Pierre Carl Ouellet or PCO. PCO, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. What about you?
I'm great, man. Great. I had a great big meal yesterday. How was your
Thanksgiving? Yeah, mine was good. I was very simple, but just being grateful for everything that's going on right now.
And, you know, sometimes simple's the best, you know?
Yeah, it was no big celebrations or anything. Just we kept it simple and feels good.
Absolutely. Well, whenever you're ready, man, we can jump right in.
Yeah.
All right. So first I got to know, what was your first exposure to wrestling and how did you get into it?
I was really, really young. As a Canadian youngster, grew up, you know, playing hockey, the age of 3 years old. And every season, every winter, and eventually at around 11, 12, by the time I was waiting for my lift in the morning to pick me up to go to the rink, there was some TV going on and wrestling was coming through, and I used to watch it, and I was really into it. So it was also a big documentary on Edward Carpentier, and every time that documentary would play over and over, like week after week or every day, I don't know, but I've seen it so many times, but that really got me hooked into pro wrestling.
Now, around that time, I believe, and I'm not sure how many people know this, but you lost sight in one of your eyes, am I correct?
Yeah, right at the age of 12. Yeah,
now, how did that affect you going forward?
Well, as a kid, it was a really tough situation because my parents and my family, they were really worried because I was at the hospital for a month. So it was a pretty bad accident where I got shot with a pellet gun, but it was we were the bunch of kids that we were playing cowboy and Indians. We were shooting like pretty much everything in our sight, and eventually we decided to shoot ourselves in the legs, and we ran out of pellets, and I had an old game called pickup sticks, where it's a bunch of sticks, different colors that usually you have to take it off without touching the other colors. and we started putting that in our cannons and just shooting that stick, you know, on our legs. It was pinching like really hard. Then I decided to hide behind the counter to get my friend, and he was aiming for my knees and my legs. And since I was on my knees, they got me right through the eye. Even though that I closed my eye, it went through the skin and everything. So, and you know that game, like those sticks, they have the rounded edge. Oh, it's not something like a knife, you know. It's a round, so it's like a bulb. So the impact and it going through, it made a lot of damage in the eye. So now, I was supposed to, if I can give an advice, if ever you get something that gets in your eye, anybody that's listening, you usually put a cup on top of the whatever is in your eye, and you tape it around your head, and you let the doctor do that just to take the piece that's whatever it is, whatever it's in your eye, you don't touch it with your finger, you don't try to pull it out. You just go to the hospital like that, and they'll remove it gently, you know, with the appropriate tools. But the reflex was, well, something in, something's got to get out. So I made a lot of damage. So that's why I was hospitalized for a month.
Jeez. So, and you're right. That's the first thing I would do is try to get it out, you know?
Yeah. Cause you're panicking, you know, you're a kid and you just take it out and you look at yourself in the mirror and you hope that everything's still the same, but it's not, it wasn't the same. But I was so pumped up, I was so much on the adrenaline thinking I'm okay. I'm okay. No, I can't see. No, I can't see. I can't see. Yeah, I can't see. No, I can't. So it was like one of those deals where, you know, when I was putting my hands in front of my good eye, I thought I could see, but I couldn't see nothing. And then, you know, some adults, my uncle came and got me to the hospital. And then I just fell unconscious because, you know, it's, when the adrenaline, like, was out of there, I just went in the vap. And then I woke up and the surgery was done and everything. They had the thing to, you know, give me the anesthesia and just do all the work on my eye and just needed to stay flat on my back for the blood to, you know, and everything to recuperate. So I couldn't move my head and everything. So it was a tough time.
Sounds like quite a process to go through.
Yeah, it was, especially at that age when you're 12, you know, and you like sports and you're, you know, you're playing football, baseball, hockey, and you know, wrestle with your friends for fun and, you know, and things like that. And then tennis, and you play all kinds of sports. You're outside from, you know, 8 in the morning till 6 at night, you know, when you don't go to school. So it was hard for me just to stay on the bed.
Now switching gears, early on in your career, you got to work in a team called the Super Bees with Eddie Watts. Now, yeah. What was it like getting to work with Eddie Watts, and what did that do for your career?
Well, I was new. That was in the Maritimes territory for Emile Dupre, and I got there, and I didn't know nobody. I didn't know who was Eddie Watts. I didn't know who was Buddy Wayne. I didn't know was Bob Brown. I didn't know was Masaccino. Everybody's just kind of new. And so I kind of got along good with the guys. And I think it worked out well with Eddie. But it was super green. You know, it was my first territory ever. Other than I was coming out of the wrestling school and I was wrestling like once a week, every Sunday afternoon, in Montreal, in front of 200 people, and basically that's all the experience I had. And I was basically, you know, in those years when you broke in, you know, it was not like nobody was trying to help you. If you were put against main event guys, they would just eat you up, you know, just beat the shit out of you, you know, like. That was the way that you were brought up in the business, you know. So you get squashed and you get hurt. And then sometimes you're wondering about, is it worth it for me to go the next Sunday? And then it's the same thing and the same thing and with different guys. And sometimes you have the chance to fall on a good opponent or give you a little something, you know, that let you back. It let you backdrop him or give him a drop kick or sell something a little bit before he squashes you. And some of the guys were nicer than the others, but it was like really tough to make it. And you know, from the wrestling school, like from, you know, the veterans that were bringing us up, you know, that were teaching us wrestling, they were tough on the kids. I mean, I was 16 and I remember we were like pretty almost 50 guys when the whole group started, and we ended up being 3 guys at the end. So, and by the time I start wrestling, I was probably just another guy that was wrestling with me or, you know, at the same time. So it was just a elimination process by the hard way.
You know,
so that's why when I went to with Eddie Watts, that was good. I came from no territories, like where I was just doing that, to being put on top and wrestling against the Booker every night and Jono. So I messed up a few spots and I made a lot of mistakes because I was there and I didn't speak English at all. So that was kind of tough too. So I kind of learned quick, but I screw up a lot of spots, and it was not so much fun. It has been like a good learning experience, but such a tough time.
You know, speaking of tough, you spent some time in Puerto Rico. Now, do you think that experience helped make you more of a well-rounded wrestler?
Well, the style of Puerto Rico is very different than what we see now, but it certainly helped me build my confidence because I was wrestling on top there, Carlos Colon or Jose Gonzalez and Vader. And one of those two, and so I was the main event all the time in Puerto Rico. So that was good experience for me. I just came from England where I was pretty much working on top there too for Brian Dixon. And then I went for Otto Vance, CWA in Germany, where it was a lot of talent. They gave me a huge push there too. So Puerto Rico was, it was a good learning experience for me.
What was your initial reaction to being pitched the Quebecers gimmick? And did you guys have any say with any of that?
Not at all. Not at all. What happened is like I met Jacques Cougeau in Puerto Rico. I was in an angle against Jose Gonzalez, and Carlos sometimes would bring some guys that were not under contract with Vince at the time. It would bring them for a weekend or three weekends in a row. And so anyway, Jacques was coming to work against Carlos, and I was already there. I had already been there for like 3 or 4 months. And then I met him. He was watching some of my matches and kind of hooked up. And then I guess he had the idea for us to be a tag team, and called Vince, and I went for a couple of tryouts in the Carolinas for Vince, and then I was in touch with Jacques, and I guess they would go through him more than they wouldn't call me. They would call him all the time, then he would call me. So I had the time to go do a tour in Japan for Wing with Bill DeMott. And when I came back from Japan, I came back to Puerto Rico a little bit, and Jacques called me, and then he said, we're starting in June. So they had laid out my name, Pierre. They had laid out Quebecers gimmick. And they wanted originally to call us the Mounties, but because of the lawsuit from the actual Mountie police in Canada, we couldn't use that name. So we still sang the song, we're not the Mounties, we're in some, we're brave, we're strong, we're not the Mounties. We always get our men. So it was like a little receipt from Vince having us singing that to the Mounties, but that's why the whole gimmick came like that, the Quebecers and everything.
Now, speaking of working with Jacques, you guys famously tore the house down in his retirement match for WWF in a sold-out show in Montreal. Now, did you have any idea that you guys would be working together again a few years later in WCW?
Not at all. I thought my vision from there was to steal the show against Jacques there on the main event, you know, working on top of the roster. You know, everybody was wrestling on that show, from Shawn Michaels to Bret Hart, Jim Neidhart, Razor Ramon, and Jeff Jarrett. And I mean, all the talents from the companies, they were wrestling on that show and were main event. And then we literally stole the show. And I thought that, and Vince was there, and all the corporate guys, you know, Bruce Pritchard and Briscoes and all the talent, you know, directions, the ones that are making decisions, they were all there. So I figured, you know, I've been making good impressions as tag team champion, and now the main event against Jock on his retirement match, making good impression. I'm thinking now, you know, let's go in towards the Intercontinental title and the world title eventually. That was my vision, you know, just get in line for those titles and angles like that. And so that's why I never thought I would be back with Jock.
Now, do you feel like the backstage politics at that time got in the way of you moving any further in the company?
Yeah, that was way after that match that all the problems came, you know, the politics and all that. But basically, I got caught up, you know, in a different situation with no experience whatsoever. The only person that I could reach out to experience or making decision or making the right move. I could only turn towards Jacques because that's the only person that I thought I could maybe trust. But since that he left on the bad terms of company, because if he decided to retire, it's because he was not happy anymore with the way things were going. Was not happy with what they were doing with us as the Quebecers, and he was not happy with the supposedly the money that he was promised wasn't there. So when he retired, he asked for a lot of money to compensate for what was missing on his payday. That's one of the reasons why he retired. And so that's why if I was asking advice to Jacques, I don't think I would get a good advice. Not because he didn't want to give me a good advice, but just because
he was unhappy at the time.
Yeah, he just had a bad experience with Vince. So, of course, he was not going to say, take it relaxed, take it easy. Whatever happens, people won't remember in 4 months from now or 6 months from now. Just do what you have to do and perform the best that you can perform. And you know, just keep your eyes on your goal. Of course, he was not going to say that. So it was like 25 years old. So, you know, it was like, felt like a kid, you know, handling great.
Absolutely.
Very important decision in my career.
Yeah, so it wasn't too long after that you had the feud with Bret Hart, and I think you guys tore the house down, especially at the In Your House 3 pay-per-view. Was that one of your favorite feuds, or who were some of your favorite people to work while you were in WWF?
Well, Bret was certainly the feud that I really enjoyed the most, but I had more, you know, tag team match and single matches with big names, so to speak. So I really liked a lot of matches that we had. I think we had great matches with the Steiner brothers, even though like we weren't like super. Like I thought both Scott and Rick, they were really cool to work with, but I guess in their mind, I don't know what was going on with them and Vince, but it was something going on that they weren't happy, but they were professional enough to, you know, to work great matches with us. So I really thought we had good matches with the Steiners, and then we had another one, Royal Rumble with Bret and Owen, that I really, really liked. And also we had great matches because long time, long history with the Fatu and Samu, the Samoans, they were great with us. Because they started in Montreal and they knew the Rougeaus. And, you know, I was a fan of them as a kid because even though they were just a little bit older than me, like 10 years or so, or 5 or 6, I don't know how much older they are, but when I was like maybe 13, 14, 15, I used to watch them at the Pulse of Arena in Montreal, so, or on TV for international wrestling. So I don't know, like chemistry was there. So we had always good matches against them. And they were always like pumped when they come to Canada or Montreal. So they were really nice.
Now, can you describe to us like what your time was like in WCW compared to your time in WWF?
Well, I remember when at WrestleMania 10, that Jock, you know, we were supposed to have like a big win for us as the champion. And Pat Patterson came up to us in the afternoon. This is a good news and bad news. Which one do you want worse? You know, it's going to be two bad news. So, but we'll say we'll go with the good one first and the bad after. So the good news was you're going to retain the titles, but the bad news is like you're not going to have the big win that we promised you. It's going to be like a count out. And Jock totally lost it there. Like he was so mad because, you know, he had promised us the big win for WrestleMania, like a strong win, because we felt that our gimmick was, we had devastating moves, but we always win by, you know, some sort of, not stupid rules, but with Quebec rules or under, you know, never with a nice, clean pin in the middle of the ring. It was always like some sort of
cheating.
Cheating's all right when you're a heel. It's okay to cheat, but if after cheating you can have a clean 1-2-3, but it was more or less, you know, okay, he's going to get hit by the bell, and then you're going to have your feet on the ropes. And it was, or
Johnny Polo's going to distract him.
Yeah, or it was like, it's going to be a DQ, but you'll still be the champion. It was like never like a really strong win, you know. It's like we're barely hold on to the titles, you know. It's like, almost got killed, but they retained.
Scratching
the title.
And clawing, yeah.
They walk back to the dressing room, or you know, I don't know. It's just it was just hard, you know. So we're thinking we got like we're very innovative, like with double team moves and combos and things like that, and that looked pretty powerful and pretty strong. So we're hoping to get like a little run where we would get actual, like, proper wins. And so it was supposed to start WrestleMania, and it didn't happen, and Jock decided to give his notice that, being business, you know, doing the match and everything, but working towards the retirement match eventually because he wasn't happy. But in my mind, I didn't want to go to WC because Jock was asking me, let's go to WCW. I said, first, we're under contract. We will have to let roll like a good amount of time before we're available for them. And second of all, like since I'm a kid, I just always wanted to work with WWE. So to me, it took me like almost 2 years to get a good relationship and having the chance to. Whenever I could, you know, knock on his door, Vince would say, okay, come in. Or he would tell me anytime if you have to talk, if you have anything, just let me know. My door is always open for you. So just to build that kind of trust and relationship with with the boss takes time. And I felt like I was going to go there in WCW and I had to rebuild all my connections with another company. So I was not really into it. So at first I was not supposed to go. That's why I stayed. And then I made all kinds of weird decisions and things happened with Sean and Kevin. I decided that I was going to go to WCW. But the difference is that it was pretty much felt like it was nobody running. All the boys were running the business and there was no call coming from upstairs. And I remember our first match on Nitro. We were supposed to get a win over the Nasty Boys, and the Nasty Boys went to Hulk and they changed the finish. So that's how we started. Yeah. Yeah. So that's how it was in WCW. But you know, the Nasty Boys were close to Hulk, but also Jacques was also close to Hulk. So that's why we had the show in Montreal, you know. Bougeau versus Hogan and myself against Big Show. So, but it was not a good for me. I don't know. I was not in a mood to work for that company. I didn't get a good feeling, and I was not very motivated for WCW. It took so long. It took like 8 months to get the deal together. So it was just an endless process of dealing every day with lawyers and Eric Bischoff and WCW. And it was just the stuff, you know, at that time, you know, I was probably not as strong mentally that I am now. And I was probably, you know, more waiting for a quick satisfaction, you know, a quick answer and things, but like the things to get rolling faster and things like that. And then once we got there, kind of started on the wrong note, not with the Nasty Boys themselves, because they were nice guys and they were cool, but just the fact that they were supposed to come in on a, you know, couple of wins and strong
kind of soured,
on a strong side, and you know, coming from WWE to WCW and Impact, WCW didn't work the way it was supposed to, the way it was planned. So it was, we had to kind of regroup and rethink and you know, adjust. So it wasn't a good year then.
Now, you ended up coming back to the WWF, and you were put in one of those Brawl for All tournaments. Now, what were your thoughts on the Brawl for All tournaments themselves and having to go up against Dr. Death Steve Williams in the first round?
Well, the way it was presented to me, Vince got a great idea for you. I got super excited. Oh yes, because I had been waiting for, you know, for something years to happen, because you know, I was like, sometimes I went to three different training camps at Stamford, Connecticut, and then at one point was supposed to start Monday Raw. They had me make me all of the gears for something, and then Friday, then I called the office and I said, I didn't get my ticket. Yes, for my run. I'm supposed to start this Monday, but I don't have my plane tickets. Oh, it's a change of plan. So we're going to send you to Memphis, Tennessee, and then you'll work there for a little bit until we find something. And then when we'll find something, we'll call you back. And what, you'll be under the same money under a contract with WWE, but you'll be working over there, working on something different. So just before I had the chance to get to Memphis, I got that phone call where Bruce is, hey, man, Carl, Vince got a great idea for you. I said, oh, yeah, what is it? So I'm all excited. Yeah, you know, we're going to have like 16 men fighting for real. It's going to be a shoot. And then, yeah, you'd be facing Steve Williams on your first match. What'd you say? I'm thinking if I win this thing, maybe I get a push eventually. So I'm thinking in my mind, you know, I got to win this thing, you know. So, right. So there's no other way around. And so yeah, I'm in. Right away, I didn't say I'm going to call you back. I'm going to think about it. No, I'm in. So I just 2 weeks to prepare. It was just a really short notice. And so I went. And I remember telling Jacques that I was going to do that. And he was so mad at me. You can't do that. Well, that's not what we are. We're pro wrestler. We're not, learn how to shoot fight.
Yeah,
I mean, even shoot wrestling, we never, you know, that's not our background. Like, we don't have any amateur like shoot wrestling background and no boxing.
It's so
background.
Different.
So I said, yeah, but what if I knock him out and knock the other one out and knock the other one out? Well, that might be a break for me, you know. So I was hoping. But I didn't have time to really prepare and train for that. So I didn't even know what was a double leg at that time. You know, I learned that when I was doing MMA later on. I knew like Steve Williams was like a shooter, but I didn't even know like single takedown or a double leg down or, you know, fireman scary, that they were all part of the amateur wrestling. You know, for me, it was all pro wrestling. So it was like just experience that I didn't know what I was getting into. But, you know, I thought I did good, and I stood up and didn't get knocked out, and took him down a few times, and it was a pretty good fight, you know, considering everybody thought that I was going to get killed, and everybody thought that I was going to get knocked out in less than 30 seconds, so I stood my ground, and then I showed them that I was not afraid of anybody. So,
yeah, I think you were the only one that didn't get knocked out.
Yeah, I didn't get knocked out by nobody, and also Bob Ali didn't get knocked out. So Bob Ali did good as well. So I think that's it. Everyone else got knocked out or got injured, like a neck injury or something really major happened, you know.
Bradshaw got knocked out.
a bunch of guys got injured like really bad, like Savio Vega. He won his match, but he couldn't wrestle after that for 6 months. Things like that. So, it was a bad experience for the company. It didn't make the wrestlers look good on TV. And the whole thing was a fiasco.
Now, later on, you actually ended up in ECW towards the end. Now, when you got there, did you realize that they were, like, close to going under, or did you have no idea?
Not that much, because I was talking to Rhino a little bit, you know, because I had, like, me and Rhino, we were, like, European Tag Team Champions for almost 6 months, 1997. So, I was a good friend with Rhinos, and he was telling me that, you know, he had fun there and things were going good for him. So I knew that I've heard that a lot of people were like 30,000 behind, 20,000 behind there, you know, that Paulie owed them so much money. So I knew that it was like some recurrent problems there. But I just decided like it was worthwhile taking the chance. But not too long after I wrestled there, I remember they closed down because I remember while they were closed, that was one of the weirdest thing that happened to me. It's like ECW was down under, they were closed, they weren't there anymore. And then I got a check from Paulie for one of the matches I've done with him. So I was really surprised considering that he owed a lot of money to a lot of people. So he sent me a check. It wasn't a big check, but I thought it was pretty nice.
Jeez. Now, that's crazy. Now, not too long after that, you ended up in TNA closer in the early days, and I think you had a great feud with Christopher Daniels. But then soon after, I think you were hosting like a French version of the show. What happened with TNA? What went wrong?
My perception, because I never asked anybody, I didn't say anything. My perceptions of the whole thing was that I got hired by Jeff Jarrett, and I got along good with Jeff, always did. And they pushed me right from the beginning. But my first time going there, it was like so crazy. I had to take a flight to Toronto or something like that. Go sleep at Scott Damore's house with some of the other boys. And then we had to hop in this car, go across the border to the tunnel from Toronto to Detroit, get a Southwest airline cheap air flight to Nashville, Tennessee. So it like took me 2 days just to get there for that first Wednesday show that I did. I said to myself, this is crazy. If I get to do that every Wednesday, it's gonna be hard. I mean, I've wrestled all over the world, and I've never seen anything like that before. I mean, I should maybe just do it with my car. Anyways, then we did that, and everything went good. And then after that, I was getting flown, like, from Montreal with a good airlines. And that was costing, you know, quite a lot of money for me to fly from Montreal to Nashville, and had a decent payday. I think I was costing them a lot of money, and I was not a good friend of Dutch Mantel, who was the booker at the time. I didn't know Dutch at all. I mean, we worked together for WWE. Well, he was managing the Eli Brothers. I know he was also booking in Puerto Rico, but I always missed him. You know, I never got to know him. And I think, you know, he had his guys and planned, you know, for his show. And I was expensive to bring in for a young company that had no money, because most of the guys were driving from Florida or Atlanta, or, you know, they were all pretty much, it was not so much flying, it was a lot of driving. And it was like a cheap budget company at first. And I think the old things cost me to continue to work there, basically. That's what I think.
It seemed like it was more trouble than it was worth, huh?
Yeah, I guess for them it was
for
too
you.
Expensive. Yeah, for me, I mean, it's just trying to get noticed, just trying to stay, you know, in the, you know, there's a saying like, you know, even if you don't have money, but you want an haircut, and you stay at the barber shop long enough, eventually you'll get an haircut. So I was just trying to stay in the circuit, you know. As much as possible. So yeah, that was the plan.
And then, okay, so 2011 comes and you retire, and then lo and behold, 2016 comes, and then you set the wrestling world on fire, man. Matches with Walter, who's actually, I think, gone on the record and said he was afraid to fight you. and then creating Villain Enterprises with Marty Scurll and Brody King. I mean, what's next for PCO, man? You guys have the six-man tag championships. What caused this giant resurgence?
Well, I guess I never stopped looking at my goals. You know, I had promised myself that I was going to reach some goals, and I kept that piece of paper with me, you know, in my room or on myself, or I was looking at it like all the time. But during that period of time, maybe I was looking at it maybe not as often as I was for during a certain time. I kind of got, I don't know if it's going to happen again, but I was still looking into it. And I had still like high hopes that something would happen, but it was getting tighter and tighter. And then I knew the chances were getting like, you know, tiny chances maybe eventually, but I had still hope. And so, you know, 2011, I didn't know the indie circuit in the U.S. wasn't really on fire. Not much was going on in Canada. I had like a bunch of tryouts with Vince, 2007, 2008, 2009. And I had like no really, had no character really that they were really in love with, but they really liked. For them, I mean, it was nothing really that really attracted their attention or anything like that. So things would just work it out, and then I just saw. I'm just going to let go for a little bit, you know, just totally detach myself from it. Because sometimes when you want something too much, instead of attracting it, you're pushing it because you want it so much. You want, but you're forcing things. So I kind of decided just to let go for a while. And I started to do karate and, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and trampoline and other stuff that would increase my knowledge in wrestling, or, you know, different moves and things like that. I kept on working on my craft. But, you know, from a distance. I didn't really give any thought if how things would happen or what would happen, but it was, you know, for so many years I was looking at my goals and I was repeating my goal, and I had my goals so deep down in my mind, my subconscious, that you know, I was doing these other things, and then eventually someone asked me if I wanted to do, because the thing when I was doing the voiceovers in French for TNA on the French TV station, I was making more money than I was making when I was wrestling in TNA. I was doing the commentary every week. And after 3 years, I told my boss there at the TV station that I was going to England to work for Brian Dixon because I wanted to make a comeback in wrestling. And he said, "Do you want me to keep your job for, you know, I'm going to have someone replace you for 3 months, but if it doesn't work out for you, you can come back here anytime because we really like you." And I told the guy, his name was Robert. I told Robert, I said, "Robert, if I tell you to keep my job, it's because I don't believe in myself. And I'm going to England knowing that I don't believe in myself, that if I don't make it, I can have a job when I get back. I'd rather burn my ships, you know, so when I cross the water and I want to get back on my ship to go back on the other side, I can't. So it's either
the bridge is still there.
It's either I die on the island or I make it. So it happened that I died. Yeah, I didn't make it anyways. It didn't work out. And that's what I was saying, because I had a bunch of tryouts over in England for WWE. Didn't work out. And then my girlfriend was pregnant of my daughter at the time. So I came back, and then I gave time to my daughter a little bit. And like I said, I was doing all the other things, karate, trampoline, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and all those things. And then someone asked me, says, man, he said, you should do the analyzing the pay-per-views for WWE or the Raw, and you should have a little channel on YouTube, and you should start doing that and talking about your experience in the past. So I started with a little YouTube channel doing things that someone I didn't even know his name, like, was, you know, got me hooked up, you know, started my YouTube channel, and we're gonna place a camera like this, like that, you're gonna say this, you're gonna say that. I didn't even know the guy, so I'm starting doing things, and eventually Hannibal sees what I'm doing on the Hannibal. He's got a good YouTube channel. He's got a lot of followers, so subscribers. So he asked me if I want to wrestle for his promotion. So I go and I wrestle for him, and I wrestle a couple of other shows, and I'm doing good. And then I got a phone call from Michael Blanton, who wanted me to wrestle for his company in Indiana, which the match would be against Ethan Page. So I'm going there. He asked me if I want to do January 13 or April 21st. That was 2018. So I said, I'm going to do January 13, because I knew I wanted to be in the WrestleMania weekend. So I had to get seen before that. So and Joey Janela was watching. He was wrestling on that night. And a bunch of guys were there that I know today, that they were there in Indiana when I wrestled Ethan Page. So,
fantastic match, by the way.
Yeah, so we kind of had a great match. And then right after that, Joey's like, hey, I'm doing that thing, you know, at WrestleMania weekend. It's called Spring Break. So I'd like to have you if you want. So, like, that's pretty interesting. You know, WrestleMania 34, Walter. I didn't know who Walter was. So, who's Walter? He's a bit big guy, you know, from Austria, German. So, I really don't know. I'm going to check on the net, see what I can find about him, everything. So, I got in touch with GCW and the Georgia Spring Break, the organization. And they said, well, we're going to give you that amount of money, but we can't afford to fly you there. So can you make your way there? Make my way there. Yeah, I want to drive. So I drove my car there. It took me 40 hours to get there for a 25-minute match.
Wow.
But I knew that was going to be my big breakout, you know. So I knew, I just had the feeling that I had to do really good, really, really good, and something good was going to come out of it. So I got there, I drove all this thing without sleeping, you know, I'm going there straight, 40 hours, no sleep. So I get there, I sleep one night, but I get there the night before. So the next night, Walter comes up to me. I said, do you remember, Carl, we wrestled each other in Germany in 2000, I guess it was 2005 or something like that, 2001. I don't know. It was a while ago. Walter was 18 when I wrestled him the first time. It was a four-way match, so I kind of clicked. And then Zack Sabre was there. Well, he said, me too. It was there at the 16-carat tournament. So, oh yeah, okay. So Zach Sabre was there, and Walter. They were all talking about 16 karat tournament WXW in Germany. So it boosted my confidence a little bit. The fact that I had a little chemistry with Walter, you know, a little bit. You know, we knew each other. We had to work each other like a couple of spots maybe in that match, but still, it was something there. So it was kind of cool. And I told Walter, I said, for you, you're probably wrestling like 3 times a day for the whole week. And it's probably just another match. But for me, it is my WrestleMania match. So I hope that you're as pumped that I am for this match. And he delivered. It was really, yeah. So, yeah, I guess that was one of the best matches of my career. And the one that I really liked, the fact that it was so cold at the beginning of the match. And then during the chop exchange, and when I start hitting like all kinds of spring-legged moonsault, and you know, Jurgen Rana of the top, and a bunch of movement, moonsault of the top rope to the outside, and things like that, the crowd really came on glue. They stood up, boom. They were like all sitting, and eventually everybody got up and started to like a big ovation, you know, during halfway into the match, all the way to the end, to the finish. And then after that, like, there was a big change, you know, a big paradigm shift, a big quantum leap, where every companies in the U.S., every indie companies, they were getting in touch with me. So I worked for every single company in the States after that match.
Now, lastly, how did Villain Enterprises come about, and what's next for PCO?
Well, it was weird. I just get like a DM once in a while from Marty Skrull, and he would always ask me, are you under contract? Because I was wrestling for MLW at the time, but I had no contract. You know, I didn't want to sign anything. There's just a few companies that I knew that I would sign contract with. But they agreed like to bring me in without me signing. So it was cool. And then, so I got a few texts, and then I would let it go, and then I'd get another one. And no, I didn't sign with anyone. Eventually got more serious, and then Ring of Honor themselves contacted me, and then discussed the contract and things like that. And they proposed to me the Marty's idea, the Villain Enterprises with Brody King, which I knew from the indie scene a lot. I had worked him a lot. I knew that he was great talent. And Marty, I met him, and one of those times when I was in England, and I thought that all the time that I made there was down the drain and nothing good was going to come out of that. And so weird that 5-6 years after that, Marty reached out to me, and then we started the Villain Enterprises. So I was really grateful and really happy that the way that things turned out. And then was a huge pop when I started in Philly. I was first introduced, and it's been pretty crazy since then. It's been more than a year now, and it's crazy. And now it's the main focus, and the goal is obviously the World Heavyweight title that Rouge got right now. So that's the main focus. It's coming in a couple of weeks, Friday the 13th. So it's going to be December, and PCO versus Rouge for the World Heavyweight title. So that was always the main objective, the main goal, and still is. So we're right on point, right on target. just a few years later after I wrote my goals down.
Hey, you're making them happen, you know. That's all that
yeah
is.
Yeah, that's all that counts, you know. I mean, I'm very happy the way it goes, and I feel that I had to change a lot. So I think if I would have stayed the same person, that none of this would have happened. Just had to really look at myself in the mirror and try to become not just a better athlete and a better wrestler, but also a better person and get it, being more disciplined. And then, because you know, at one point when you got, you know, you sign a big contract, WWE, wrestling on top with the titles, and then things are shifting a little bit. You got your goals, but you have goals that you haven't written down that are popping in your mind, like, oh, look at this girl. She's pretty nice. well, maybe we should go out tonight and have a few drinks and have fun and just relax, because it's been a lot of pressure. And then everything is shifting from, you know, from what was your goal to, you know, distractions and pleasures and, you know, other things aren't important, but it's just nature of life, I guess. And
absolutely,
like so many guys in so many different sports, I felt in that big trap, and then I spin there for quite a while, and I was, you know, I started to hate like a lot of the wrestlers, not knowing that everything that happened to me was caused by me, but I thought it was because of someone else had said, or because this, or because of that. And then I had to really, you know, work towards, look at my goal. I had to look at my goals and think, okay, well, why do you want to become world champion? What's the reason behind it? Is it just to get more girls, get famous, boost your ego, or is it something much more profound than that? And then when I found the reasons why I wanted to do this, it was more something where, okay, I'm to be able to achieve this, I'm going to have to be the best person that I can be. I'm going to have to be top on discipline. I know I can't miss a workout. I can't, you know, I got to get in the ring like 3 times a week. I got to do this. I got to do that. You know, I got to, you know, everything.
It's your legacy. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's got to be focused around the goal. And the goal is like to obtain that goal, you have to be the best that you can be. And then by doing so, maybe, you know, inspire others and do the right things. And I just think when you are doing this for a purpose where you're trying to just to be a better version than yourself, better than you were yesterday, every dimension of your life, I think it just makes you a better person. And when I found those things that is what I was going to fight for, everything started shifting. So it took a while for me to realize why I wanted to become world champion so badly. The real reason under that, you know, not just to say, hey, I'm PCO and a world champion. No, why, you know.
Right.
You know,
what does it really mean to you?
Yeah, yeah, because it had to be something really profound, because it kept the burnt in my heart, you know. So it kept burnt in my subconscious. I knew it was something really, really important there to accomplish. It was not just something, you know, just, oh, I'm going to do this just to do this and just to brag about. It was something more than that. So once I found that, I kind of found the real reason why I wanted to do this.
Well, PCO, I want to thank you, first of all, again, for coming on the show. You've been a fantastic guest. You're one of the most humble people I think I've ever talked to. Now is the time of the show where I like to have my guests usually tell where the fans where they can reach and interact with them at, if you don't mind doing that.
Yeah, you can reach me on my Twitter platform, which is at PCO's Not Human. You know, I always come up with a great video Monday night PCO and Destro every Monday. You can also find me on Instagram, PCO's Not Human as well. Or on Facebook, it's always PCO's Not Human on the three platforms. So, and also got a YouTube channel, not the one that I started, and after I started wrestling. So I went back to my wrestling channel, the one where, you know, I'm doing all the Monday night videos with Destro. And
I love them. So
that's Pierre Carl Ouellet on YouTube, and you have like 86. It's gonna be I think 87 next Monday. It's 86 episodes of different stuff, crazy stuff that we've done. So and we keep on create new material week after week, and different material and new material, and it's pretty cool. So it's towards the character of the wrestling character and Destro, the big part of it there, because he's the one who brought me back to life with the electricity. So if you don't know the story, just go on my YouTube channel, you'll get the story altogether.
Thank you so much. And I'm, of course, your host, James C. Turner Jr., and you can find me on Twitter at JPsAllDay1990. PCO, again, thank you for coming on the show, man.
All right, James C. Turner, thanks a lot, man.
Of course, appreciate man. Anytime. Tune in next week, everybody.
Nothing but positive vibes all day. Grinding, trying to make a better way. Better listen to what the songs say. Truth be told, you better slow your roll. I've been on the same road before. You know I'm the chosen one. I spit flows from the brain, young G1.